recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the Affair Recovery Library Q&A call, EMS and EMSO call for the day. And we've got two questions today. This is the 23rd of June, so let's get on with our questions. First question, intrusive thoughts. Can you talk a little bit about intrusive images? When I get triggered and run off with intrusive images of my husband's unfaithfulness, he frequently prays against the enemy's attack. I get angry because I feel these images are not memories per se, but thoughts I have. It's like remembering going to the store, or sometimes if I dwell on them and fall apart. If I try to replace them with thoughts about God or faithfulness or so forth, they stay and continue to plague me. Then I would consider it an attack. Also, I don't want further details about his affair. I have very few details, mainly that it was 9 women. But I wonder if I'm making it harder for myself, because then I can let my mind run rampant and anything could be possible because I have no details. Lastly, could you explain the process of EMDR, how it is done, some theory on Earth, why on Earth does it work, how many appointments it takes, etc. It doesn't erase memories, but it takes the sting away, as if years had passed. Thank you. Okay, so you've got several things in here. Intrusive thoughts are a real problem, and one of the things that, let me start with the last question, EMDR. It is a process similar to what happens in REM sleep. It's called eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. When we sleep at night and have dreams, as our eyes go back and forth, as I understand it, it basically anesthetizes the brain, which allows you, when you wake up, not to feel any sort of real emotion, even though the dream may have been very strange. You can then look at it and say, well, that was interesting, or that was funny. Well, the same process can work using EMDR. What it effectively does, you go back and forth between the left and the right hemisphere of the brain using some handheld devices, potentially some eye movement, and you get the same effect where it basically anesthetizes the brain so that you can look at those images and then begin to really process them. And once they become coherent stories, you're able to control the thoughts. And what I mean by coherent, as long as it doesn't make sense to you, as long as you've got the anxiety, it's difficult when you begin flooding to pull back out of the flood. To stop the flooding, ultimately, you have to get your mind around it, and then you're actually able to get out of those images if they come. Typically, I've seen people do 4, 5, 8, some longer. I would talk to the therapist that you might be working with to see what they would say about that. If you're in Austin, one of the things that I might suggest, John Haney and Leslie Hardy at the Affair, well, at Crossroads Counseling, who also work with us here, are both very effective in EMDR. If you're out of town, you can probably look up EMDR therapists in your area and hopefully find somebody, you can find somebody good, not hopefully. Second thing, I don't want any further details about the affair, and you're just talking about, would it help? Depending on what's happening in your mind, and the thoughts, sometimes more detail actually does help regarding what you're making up. The way I usually do that is have your mate tell this as a story, not a whole lot of detail, but the detail you want to avoid is, I think, what I would call comparison details, where you compare yourself against the other person or things that you might be able to paint a picture in your head with. Those are not helpful. But the questions you keep struggling with, just in terms of what happened, frequently writing those down and going through those things with your mate, answering the questions, helps get them out of your head, because your mind keeps trying to wrap its mind around really what happened. There are several articles in the library about disclosure. You might want to read those, and it's got recommendations of what type of disclosure might be helpful for you. And to me, it needs to be not an ongoing 6-month thing, but hopefully the two of you could talk about it and you could get detail. Now, let me give an example in terms of disclosure. One of our mentor couples was having a great deal of difficulty in the disclosure process. Part of it, they were almost a year out. She was still flooding, but what was causing the problem, every time she drove around town, when she saw a motel, which her husband had been taking prostitutes to, she didn't know which motel it was, so every motel in town was triggering her. So she asked her husband to drive with her to every one of the motels. They did. It took about 6 hours because he had done a lot. And then at each motel, both of them got out and they prayed over the motel. They prayed as they walked around the motel. And ultimately, she reclaimed each one of those motels for herself. So now when she drives around, she says those particular motels don't bother her. But even better, since she knows those locations, every other motel in town also doesn't trigger her. So that's a great example of where more detail ultimately really helped her and really reduced the number of triggers, because now she knew that things she had feared really weren't a reality. And she was also able to do something to reclaim the places she did fear. One of the things that you may also want to do, so you say, if I dwell on them and fall apart, if I try to replace them with thoughts of God, His faithfulness, and so forth, they still continue to plague me, then I consider it actually an attack. Well, so learning how to thought shift is really important. The first thing I typically have people do is really come up with a very specific plan. For instance, I've had people do a lot of memorization just so that it's really encouraging to them. Almost rather than just thoughts about God's faithfulness, I would suggest memorizing something like the Sermon on the Mount or some psalm that you really like, Psalm 37, the book of James, anything like that, and that is verses that are very encouraging to you. Then when the intrusive thoughts come, I'd recommend actually quoting those things. What you'll find is you don't have enough brain power to do that much memorization and at the same time stay focused on the intrusive thoughts. I also have people, when they get intrusive thoughts, especially if it's nighttime, turn the lights on, put their feet on the floor, and begin just to name objects in the moment or in the room so that they stay focused in the moment. A lot of times journaling and just putting the thoughts down can help get them out. Sometimes if they're bad enough, I've suggested that people potentially even consider medication, just because it almost allows people to make a better choice, and particularly if they feel like they're suffering from some sort of depression. The last technique, if you want to use prayer, I usually have a good friend or somebody that they've got, or if they're seeing me, we'll sit there and go to each one of those intrusive thoughts and look at them and begin to pray for God to show them where he was in the room at that moment and what he wants them to know. By doing that, it reframes the image. And it looks very different when you realize God was there in the room and that he was up to something. He was taking, you know, what I would say the worst thing that ever happened and making it the best. But that particular technique takes away, I think, a lot of the fear and allows you to transform, to see things differently. Because these thoughts are kind of random, I kind of believe getting more information in your case would be a good thing. But that's up to you. And I hope you're able to do well with that. So, great question. Thank you very much. Second question. Hi, Rick. I have a question about triggers. My husband and I are nearly 2 years into recovery. At this point, I am still dealing with a multitude of triggers. Actually, I'm not even sure to call them triggers. Sometimes they're more like thoughts of the affair and events. I have no idea what my gain is from this and don't know why I'm still doing it. If I'm very busy and distracted, I do much better. But as soon as I get a break, my brain goes back to thinking about it. Also, I'm having a difficult time changing the lens in which I see my husband through. He had multiple affairs, many that were just sexual, and the last resulting in an emotional and sexual affair. I had no idea, not even one time, one little cue he was doing this. So fast forward a little bit, and like I said, we are 2 years into recovery. He's doing a good job creating safety and doing the necessary steps to heal. I do see many good things about my husband, despite his behaviors. However, many times I can't stop thinking about him as a liar and cheater, in addition to the good things he has. I think this is hindering some of my growth. I look at it this way. I've spent nearly 30 years developing into the person I am, striving to be honest, moral, dependable. It's not easy, but I have been this type of person to a varying degree for most of my life. So in return, at least all the years I've known my husband, he's been a liar and cheater to some degree. His actions have changed drastically. But it's not enough to change my entire perspective. Thank you again for your perspective. So the first thing I have, my thought is that forgiveness is giving up all hope of having a better past. And sometimes people who are struggling with the things that you're mentioning, it's like there's a part of them that doesn't want to forget because they don't want to once again be a fool. So they protect themselves by, if nothing else, unconsciously not wanting to let go and move on. Grief is about denial, depression, anger, conversation or bargaining, and acceptance. So one of the things you may be struggling with is getting through those stages of grief. And at some point you have to say, okay, it is what it is. And I'm ready to go ahead and be vulnerable and take the risk to go forward. Or you need to say, I'm not able to do that. But once you get to the place of just honestly saying, okay, it's done. That life is over. It's a new life. I'm going forward from this point. Once you begin to see that old life is dead, you're able to go into what I would call transition. Transition is like death, burial, and resurrection. The first stage of transition is death. You realize that what you once had, those 30 years, it's gone. It's no more. It'll never be. And you have to come to peace with that. I know that there are places in my life where I kept screaming, I want my life back. I want at least to wake up out of a bad dream and have the life I thought I had. Well, and that's not possible, obviously. So if you can let that go, you say, okay, it's done. Second step is really the burial stage. It's kind of no more and not yet. But in that stage, you just sit there and just live life, maybe not even knowing or seeing the type of future that God might have for you or you and your mate. But eventually, once you've let it go, new ideas, new vision, other things come to mind, and you're able to move on. It is difficult when someone has been involved in multiple affairs, and obviously I hate that you've gone through this. At the same time, if he's safe, you have to make the decision of whether or not you want to move forward or stay stuck. And that part of you that doesn't want to let go, obviously it's protecting you. So hopefully, though, you'll be able to just come back and say, look, I am willing to take a risk. I'm willing to give myself to you once again. And I want to be all in. I want to move forward. And often when that happens, then it allows you to be able to, again, I think, move forward and I guess let go and move on. And I don't know if that's not helpful, what the answer I just gave, why don't you maybe post the same question or another maybe version of the question so I can continue giving you information and answer another question. So I just want to make sure that this is helping and that we get you what you need. So that is everything today. I want to thank you guys for joining the call. And I look forward to talking to everybody next week to healing.